Welcome to Club ADHD, the podcast edition number 5. Boy, time's flying, huh? 10 weeks. Club ADHD, the podcast, is what I call a spoke in the Club ADHD wheel, because we have the podcast, we have the Facebook page, and we have the Twitter account, all brought to you by the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, otherwise known as CADAC. And if you want to go to a website full of information when it comes to ADHD, go to the CADAC website. It's full of information, and the address for that website is cadac.ca. That's cadac.ca. If you want to learn about ADHD, if you want to learn how you can be an advocate when it comes to spreading the word that ADHD is real, they've got information on that. It's a great site. They're great people. We thank them for sponsoring Club ADHD. The next upload will be September 19th. Boy, we're in September. Summer is just about gone. Where did it go? I don't know, but I miss it already. I love summer. Hey, I'll deal with a white Christmas okay, but after Christmas, bring on spring! Okay, I can't change the way the Earth rotates, but it would be nice to think I could. In any case, with September comes a brand new school year. The kids are thinking about their studies. Yeah, right. Especially if you have ADHD. Okay, they're thinking about their classmates, maybe a new teacher or a new kid in school. And when they're doing that, chances are they're not thinking about road safety, especially the young ones. They might decide to cross the road and forget to look both ways. So it's up to us to be aware of that. And yes, we ADHD types have been known to maybe step on the gas pedal a little too much, or maybe think about other things as we're driving. Why can't we just say, let's focus on road safety? Let's like road safety, because we all know that if we ADHDers like something, we'll get hyper-focused on it. And with hyper-focused comes diligence. And maybe we might prevent something bad happening. That would be nice, wouldn't it? You don't want anything bad to happen to you or anyone else, including a kid. It's not fair. So let's keep in mind of that. And if that isn't enough, what about your bank book? What about your wallet? The police are out there in the school zones. And yes, those school speed limits might seem awfully slow, but with police in a school zone at the right time of day comes traffic tickets. That's right. They have their radar guns aimed, and if they aim it at you and you're going too fast, not only will you get a speeding ticket and have to pay the usual fine, that usual fine here in Ontario at least, and maybe in your neck of the woods, will double. That's not good. Doubling is not good. Fines, not good. And let's take it one step further. What about points? With points comes insurance companies. And when that happens, insurance rates go up. So that one moment of going a little too fast might last several years in high premiums. That's no good, right? So no matter how you think about it, about saving someone from being injured or saving someone from being injured when it comes to their pocketbook or wallet. Drive safely, please. You won't regret it. There, it's my safety tip. Now, with a new school year, if you're like me as an adult, you might harken back to your school days. And that's what I've done. Now, I've been diagnosed with ADHD for the past 11 years. Now, let's go back way back to the 60s, back from grade 1 to 6, when I was taught by nuns in Boston at a Catholic school. And as the saying goes, don't mess with nuns. And I can say that is true, especially if they're your teachers, because they will not tolerate any foolishness whatsoever. They won't even let you run in the schoolyard, at least the nuns that were in my school. We had the uniforms, we had dress shoes, the girls wore the uniforms and the little beanies and all that stuff. It was very formulated, structured, almost to a military level. We would march in to school to the sounds of John Philip Sousa, and we'd march out of school by the same sounds. We would act like perfect little gentlemen and perfect ladies. There'd be no mixing of the sexes on the schoolyard. Young girls on the one side, young boys on the other side, white line in the middle, and no one will cross it. It was like that for me between grades one and six. Now let's move ahead to grade seven, when my parents decided to move to my father's homeland of rural Nova Scotia. And there I was in grade seven, rural Nova Scotia, in a public school. Totally different. Totally. No nuns around. It was, to put it mildly, somewhat lax when it came to formatics, especially before and after class. Kids were wearing sneakers, no uniforms. They were running around. They were grabbing balls in class that were on, I don't know, shelves that they would have to climb on a desk to get at, which was a no-no with nuns. That was a triple N. No nuns. Totally different. I didn't fit well in that. I was better off structured. I mean, I was, yes, my ADHD came out in front of the nuns, but usually it came out by way of me looking out the window and daydreaming, or maybe hyper-focusing on a class trip that we might be going to the zoo. But I was not an instigator. I wanted the nuns to like me. Now, here in this new environment, things were different. Things were not as strict. And I had men teachers, I had women teachers. And sometimes when I noticed the women teachers would laugh at some of my little outbursts, my humorous outbursts, then all bets were off. I would continue with those outbursts, which would not be tolerated by nuns, no siree. But in this environment, it somewhat was. And some of these teachers were nice. And let's face it, maybe I got a little bit boisterous as far as my comments. Not to say that I would be insulting or anything, but, you know, sometimes we're there to learn as opposed to me doing a stand-up act. In any case, with me being different, a Bostonian accent with ADHD, came some bullies. One in particular. One little scrawny little guy decided he was going to take me on during lunchtime. And take me on he did. And I was not aware of the fight or flight rule. I added another third element. That element was stay there and hope things would rectify themselves. God would come from heaven and stop things. That didn't work. So he got at me. And what I would do is I would try to get the other person in a position where they couldn't hurt me. I would maybe wrap my arms around them, put them in a headlock, whatever. I couldn't bring myself to punch them in the face. That would never fly. I wanted people to like me too much, to the detriment of my own physical health. Now, I would punch them in the back because my brother-in-law would wrestle a lot from my toddler years on up. And there came a time when I got older and I would hit him in the back and he'd say, knock that out or I'm going to hit you. That hurts. So I knew it hurt and I was comfortable in doing that. And that's just a side note. In any case, the first fight, I would say kind of a draw. I wasn't doing anything, but the bully thought it was a victory. And he carried that victory over to the following year in grade eight. When we're changing classes, all of a sudden he decides he's not going to say hello as we pass by. He's going to punch me in the mouth, a sucker punch. And what a sucker punch it was. It split my lip open. Blood, it wasn't gushing out, but it was there. Lip was swollen. I'm sure teachers noticed. No one said anything. The following day, I thought, I'm going to get into it with this guy. I don't want to. I was trapped. I was led to believe that a teacher wanted me in a classroom. No teacher there, but that bully was there, and the exit was blocked. We got into the fight, but I subdued him. A couple of whacks in the back, too, and I'm sure that hurt. Now, we were on the floor, and I had him in a headlock, and I noticed there was a teacher who opened the door, wondering what was going on, and just as he was about to leave, I decided to drag us so that the teacher had to see us, and see us he did. Fight was stopped, brought into the office. The one-time bully admitted everything. He was scared to death of me. He thought, I'm not going to cross this guy. He just told everything. Now, when it came to punishment, we both got the same punishment. Strange. A week's worth of detention during lunchtime. Let's go to the next year, grade 9. Another kid. He wasn't a kid. He was a young adult. He's been driving for the past couple of years. I'm about, 14 or so? This kid had facial hair, mustache, a goatee, you name it. I made a statement in an area of the school, and this kid thought I was saying something about him. It was an innocent statement, and he took offense to it, and he wasn't going to tolerate it. I was somewhat friendly with the guy at one time. Bottom line, we got in a fight. He, to his credit, said, listen, we're going to fight. Take off your glasses. But I was doing the third element, thinking that I won't do anything and it will stop. Well, my glasses got broken. And I was wearing a heavy winter coat, couldn't wrap my arms around him. He was a scrawny young fellow, but I couldn't do it. And he capitalized on that, punched me in the nose repeatedly. The blood was gushing, literally gushing. There was a pool of blood on the floor. And that same teacher who stopped the fight last time came in and stopped this one. And we got hauled in the office. And I explained what happened. And it was understood that, oh, it was miscommunication. Now, did that kid, even though he thought he was insulted, he did attack me. Did he get punished? No, nor did I. I got punished enough. I got a near broken nose. That seemed a little unjust. But hey, I'm living life with rose-colored glasses. I mean, I wasn't diagnosed until 11 years ago. Now, let's go to a reunion, a school reunion of the same school, and one of the teachers, who was a very nice teacher, I liked her, joke around with her, she blurted out that, isn't that ironic that the person who we couldn't shut up is now on the radio? That's weird. That's what she said. Now, after I was diagnosed, I put two and two together, and I thought, well, maybe I was not the innocent guy. Maybe I was a little bit boisterous in class, you know, telling my funny lines. In any case, that does not warrant a bully coming after me. And I was thinking that it sounds like some of the teachers didn't mind that happening, kind of thought that I had it coming. That's not right. Let's go to modern day times here. You know, it's not cool to be a bully these days, but they still exist. It's not cool to hurt somebody in school especially, but it still happens. And with a kid, an ADHD, that kid is wearing a target if a bully is in his or her class or in his school. And that bully will take advantage of it. And there'll be fights. Maybe your kid will get hurt and won't tell you. Please, if you have ADHD, there's a good chance your child or children have ADHD. It runs in the family. Please talk to them. Make them aware that you're there to hear what goes on. It's not uncool to rat on someone, especially if they're physically abusing you. As a bully or anything else, your kids should feel comfortable to come to you, and you should do something about it. Don't wipe it under the rug. Don't swipe it under the rug. Go to that school and make sure that you're heard. Make sure that they know that ADHD is real and you will not tolerate bullying. And it doesn't matter if it's ADHD or not. Bullying should not exist, especially in schools. Getting all hot and bothered here, but it's true. So if you do that, you can alleviate some of the pain that I went through as a kid. And I wouldn't wish that on anyone. So there, you have my soapbox preaching for today. I'll get off my soapbox. All right, broke it a little bit here. And let's do something a little bit different. Music, please. And now the interview portion of the podcast, something we call, all together now, the interview portion of the podcast. Our guest is Keith Glenhorn, an ADHD coach and advocate who is originally from British Columbia but now lives in Halifax. Keith, who also has his plumbing certificate, decided to head cross-country to fulfill his career goals of helping people with ADHD. People just like him. As we'll hear, that decision had many a roadblock that had to be navigated. Keith starts off by giving a bit of background information about his life before being diagnosed with ADHD.
I went through kind of years of school being kind of not having any idea what the challenges I had were. I did really poor in school, and just kind of struggled all the way through. In grade 12, I had a teacher tell me that given my performance at the school, didn't matter what I did in life, that I'd always be a failure. And that kind of stuck with me for years. I went through, it took me about 6 years to get through college, trying to get into social work. I always wanted to be in the helping field. At the end of the 6 years, I ended up having around a 70% average. And I tried to get into university. They turned me away at the door, said I'd never succeed in academia, suggested a trade. And years later, I ended up working in the trades. I was actually a journeyman plumber and gas fitter, and was doing that up until I got my tickets in 2007. And then in 2008, the economy crashed. My company went from 77 to 4, and I was one of the last guys to get cut. So following that, I got diagnosed with depression and anxiety, which as a male, I just related back to being a, as part of the challenge with the job. And then 2 months later, I was describing a series of challenges, which rooted back to flash anger, and read a passage out of, "You mean I'm not stupid, lazy, or crazy?" And explain this flash anger, and then start reading more into that specific book, and it was like, holy smokes, this is totally resonating with me. So after all the diagnosis, I got put on, Ritalin and an antidepressant, said go back to work, things would be fine. And what I quickly realized that things weren't fine, and in fact, I needed to change some of the behaviors that I'd accumulated to that point. So I went back to the doctor looking for additional supports, and he tried to try to give me some short-acting Ritalin. That's not what I was looking for, and I started really diving into the search for additional supports, but couldn't find anything for adults where I was living. I was living up in Kelowna, BC at the time, and then about a year later, I found an ADHD support group down in the city. And met people kind of felt like I did and acted like I did, and went to the guy at the front of the room and asked him what he did, and he said he was an ADHD coach, and I was like, oh, tell me all about that. And he's like, listen, it's a hard gig to get into, people don't show up, they don't pay their bills. And had I kind of followed his recipe for success, that's may have been where I ended up. But I just thought, this was a way to kind of get back into that helping field, and that I could totally do it.
So you read a book. Yes. And from that book, you determined that, hey, a light bulb went on and you said, maybe ADHD. Now, you mentioned your physician. Was this a mental health physician, a psychiatrist, or just a general practitioner?
No, this was just a GP. There was no supports at all for, I couldn't find a psychiatrist at all that dealt in adult ADHD in Kelowna at the time. I was going through the mental health system. I did some cognitive behavioral therapy with a clinical social worker for about 2.5 years prior to actually finding that support group. That's when I was kind of looking for the beefier help. But yeah, I couldn't find anybody that really specialized in adult ADHD at the time.
So your general practitioner, was he or she aware or very familiar with ADHD, or just kind of threw some things at you and hope it stuck?
Yeah, it was full on just throwing things at me. It was kind of Russian roulette, right? Try these pills and see what happens. And they did something, but they didn't, like what I found is it really didn't change any of the behavioral patterns that I was looking to change.
Well, you didn't have the coaching too, right? You just had
that's
the,
it.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. So you decided that maybe this ADHD coaching would be for me. And then you pick up your roots and head on towards the other coast. How did that happen?
Yep. So what happened there was I realized that if I was going to be a coach, I needed to go back to school, because I was like, who's going to take me serious as a plumber? So I went to the Okanagan College and kind of presented my case with them. that I was wanting to do human services and then do this coaching on top of it. And they could care less. They're like, don't care. You know, just sign up for the class. It was, they treated me like a number.
Really?
My ex-wife at the time was from Nova Scotia. That's was the prompt of it.
Right.
But what had happened was I came out here in February of 2011, and I went to the community college here, the Nova Scotia Community College, and spoke to the disability resource facilitator. And not only was she in full support of me returning to school for the human services, but she also had heard about coaching and thought it was an awesome idea. And they're like, anything we can do to support you with this, we'd be happy to do so. That was the first time in my life where somebody had actually taken an idea that I had had personally and then really validated it and said that they would support me through that. And that's all I needed. You know, a half hour conversation. I basically phoned back home and I told my parents I'm moving to Nova Scotia. Literally flew home, put my house on the market, and moved out here in, I guess, July of 2011.
So you're in Halifax now?
Yep, just outside of Halifax.
I have Nova Scotia roots, and I found that Nova Scotia or the Atlantic provinces in general don't have a lot of physicians that specialize in ADHD. Is that true?
Absolutely. It's still true. Currently, there's only two psychiatrists that really focus on it. Dr. Joseph Sadek and then Dr. Mark Johnson. That's about it for the entire city of, you know, 500,000 people.
Yeah. So here you are. You're in a new place. No real connections.
Yep.
How did you get going? I mean, here you have ADHD. You've got no one coaching you. How did you figure it out?
Well, there was even more to the story, too. As I was coming across the province, I actually had started my coaching school, or not across province, across Canada. I'd started coaching school in Ontario, actually, as we're driving through. During that, I had one of these flash anger panic attacks. I just recently become married, and basically in a 1 minute, you know, flash anger episode of yelling and screaming, I killed my marriage. So I basically showed up in the province.
Wait, but this is during the drive?
Yes. I basically got married in April of 2011 down in Jamaica. I'm on the drive to Nova Scotia. You know, I'm running late for the first day of coaching school. And I have one of these episodes, and I knew right there, I killed my marriage, and I still have another, you know, 2 day drive to get to Nova Scotia.
I'm not going to ask what you said to really turn that off, but was the marriage, was that a quick decision initially?
It wasn't a quick decision. Like, we'd been together for quite a while. There were some additional challenges on top of it. I think the idea of me moving to Nova Scotia was more, I was like, oh, your family's from here, so we'll want to move here. But I didn't really take her into consideration when I made that choice. You know, I just did it and moved. And I quickly realized where her head was at. She basically, we basically came over here, and we were talking on the way over that she had wanted to go to Belize to study or something. And
yeah.
I said, oh, if you need to go, go ahead. Anyways, the long and the short is basically, not only did I arrive here not knowing anybody or having any support, but yeah, my wife left me a week before school started, and I was basically standing outside of this cabin that I rented out here and thinking of one of two ways to go. One was just call it a day. I've got a family history of mental health, including my dad that I lost to suicide. I was thinking about that, or, you know, you go ahead and you make the best of it and choose the better road and change your life, and that's what I chose.
Boy,
to do.
Choose the best of it. I mean, here you started out with a wife in British Columbia. You travel along in what was this, in Ontario? She flies not the coupe but the car, and you end up in Nova Scotia with just yourself, me, myself, and I. Maybe a few bucks from your sale of the house.
She came too. We made the drive together.
That must have been a hell of a drive.
Yeah. Yeah, but literally, you know, 3 weeks later, that was the end of that.
Yeah.
And that was a substantial blow, But at the same point, it was like, you know, I'm in this place. I've got the ability to create a new environment for myself. I have a mission. I screwed up, but you know, if you're going to fail, I guess at that point I was like, I got to fail forward because there's no turning back at that point.
So you were hyper-focused on being successful.
Yeah.
By the sounds of it. Because if you weren't, I mean, you know, we know how this works. I mean, zero to 100. Okay, you're in Nova Scotia. Your wife has left you.
Yep.
How do you, I mean, there's really no support there for you at that time?
Nope. Didn't know a single person. It was absolutely, I didn't know anybody.
So you rent a cottage?
Yeah, rented a house on a lake there, which was nice. Thankfully, that helped me find some mindfulness and gain my space. But basically what I did was school was starting the next week. And I went into the school and I said, listen, this is what's happening. It's not a matter if I'm going to blow. It's a matter of when. And when I do, can you support me? And they all said, no worries, Keith, we got your back. So it was kind of that looking at the value of preventative maintenance, essentially, or proactive self-advocacy. And, you know, a couple weeks in, I was writing I was challenging a computer test and something didn't go right. And, you know, I got really frustrated. I was going through the stuff with the wife too, and, you know, the separation. And I ended up leaving the class and going straight up to the principal and trying to get this guy fired. And like it was it was basically just kind of like getting me back into who I was before, right? Before I'd gone through all this therapy and I'd done all this stuff. I was like, what am I doing? I'm blowing it, you know? And so I basically was sitting at the house and I was like, I've got to do something to change this. So I went back to the school, went and met with the teacher and just said, you know, this is, again, told him specifically what was going on. And he's like, you know, Keith, I've been in, he was a child and youth guy. So he'd been in child and youth for 25 years. What you've done is nothing compared to the stuff that I've seen. But realize that you're here, you can change your whole life. Like, what are you doing? So, so that was kind of the big pivot point. And from then on, you know, I had some chaos, but from then on, that was, I made a massive change.
Now, personally don't experience the flash anger, but I have seen it in other people. One friend of mine, he'll blow, but it'll only last 2-3 minutes, but it was quite an explosion. Now, are you the same case or does it last longer?
I used to be, yeah. So that was probably the last time it ever happened. But yeah, I used to go from 0 to 100 in 2 seconds, say a bunch of things I didn't mean, do a bunch of things I didn't mean. I come right back down and walk away. It's almost like the Terminator walking away from an explosion,
right?
Calm, cool, and collected. And I'd be totally fine. I'm like, all right, on to the next thing. And everybody behind me is like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah, right? You see the flamethrower and what the flamethrower did, and it's devastation. Yeah, I can empathize. I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
So you've been able to control that. Well, is it bottled up or are you just released now?
No. So I what I did was I end up channeling that. It's an emotion, right? It's basically what I did was learn how to channel that emotion into something productive. And once I got into a field that I actually enjoyed and I could channel that into something that I actually enjoyed doing. So basically what I did is right from the get-go, I was in coaching school. So I started a ADHD support group at the school and I told them it was for students, but it was partly for me at the same time to create a little support network for myself. And, people from the school started realizing what I was doing. They're like, hey, is there anything that we can do to help? And then, you know, I started getting involved with the community, with the Canadian Mental Health Association, and they started helping out. And I just realized that this negativity, this cloud of negativity that I had been basically carrying around with me like a bag of coal for years and years, if I released it and then started walking and surrounding myself with these positive people, and the coaching school obviously helped to solidify that I could change everything. And that's what I did.
So the coaching school gave you the template on how to coach, but as far as the ADHD element, was there anything in the school that geared you towards that, or was that strictly what what you came up with yourself?
No, I mean, it was a combination of going through the school and then also going through the program that I was in. So I was in a human services course, and basically in the first 3 months of that course, they get you to kind of deconstruct your life and figure out why you do things the way you do, and then how you can take the positive parts of your life and make it work for you, essentially. And I just started focusing on the positive parts. I'm older too, right? So I was a mature student. I was looking at my teachers were around the same age that I was,
right.
And, you know, started just kind of mirroring what they were doing and how they were dealing with conflict and everything else. I just never really learned it over the years. I'm a big guy. I'm 6'7", 300 pounds. You know, nobody would ever question anything that I did. These guys would, and question it in a positive way that got me kind of thinking in a positive way to help other people.
I'm just thinking, you just described yourself, just a beefy guy. If you blew your stack, well, when you blew your stack, that must have been major. I mean, these people must have been very intimidated, but, you know, someone of your size.
Yeah, and what I did, it was just burying, like, so what, basically what happened is when I came out of, you know, high school and I was in my 20s, that's what I do. I would just go off. I just blow my lid, and then kind of, you get this adrenaline rush off the thing. But, you know, over the years, the amount of relationships that I'd lost, the amount of, I used to have road rage. Like, if I ever see somebody with somebody on the news with road rage, you're like ADD 100%, right?
Yeah.
You can pick them off from a mile away, you know? But none of it got me anywhere. So,
sure.
So basically what I was able to do is use kind of this Nova Scotia experience to just recreate who I wanted to be and, who I knew I was inside. But the only way that that was coming out was having that positive support, like this basically coaching and mentoring from the people that were around me at the time.
Now, as this is going on, you make your revelation and you're dealing with it and you're getting trained. Are you on any type of medication for ADHD, or is it just kind of cold turkey?
Cold turkey, yep. I haven't taken any medication for ADHD since 2008.
And do you yourself see anybody, or is you just pick up from your students?
Yes.
Or your clients?
At the time I was having regular check-ins with the Disability Resource Facilitator at school, and, you know, I made friends with the executive director over at the Canadian Mental Health Association to monitor where I was at. And prior to coming in there, right, I'd done 2.5 years of cognitive behavioral therapy,
right,
with a clinical social worker. We've kept in contact over the years, and actually I still connect with her every 2 weeks to this day. Whether it's positive, negative, or otherwise, it's so important to have people in your corner, right? As mentors,
sure,
to help you get to where you need to be.
And it's important for, say, someone like you as a coach. You go to some of these seminars and you hear people who are organizers, and they teach you and they say you do this and that and that and this, but they don't teach you how, as an ADHD person, are you going to get to first base to begin with. But with
exactly.
You having ADHD, you can empathize with what they're going through, and to me, it adds a little validation.
Yeah, 100%. That's been the biggest thing for me, and how my businesses, I've got two now, have taken off, is because of that. I've been there, done that. So
yeah.
Basically, when I sit down with a new client, typically I target post-secondary, people that are in transition to post-secondary, because that's where I really went awry. And I wish I had somebody that would have stepped in when I was younger. Nobody asked, right? They just said, oh, you're lazy, or,
right,
you know, study more, whatever. But nobody really did a deep dive into why I was the way I was, right?
Well, they still do that with the false myths that are out there. Tell people you have ADHD and they label you as lazy or whatever. I mean, we have that to fight against. Now, what
Absolutely.
About the fact that there are so few medical professionals who specialize in ADHD, or mental health professionals? The people that you see, are all of them diagnosed, or they have a sneaky feeling, or how does that work?
They're not all diagnosed. Quite a few of them are, or have been along the way. I kind of focus on neurodiversity instead of just ADHD. I started off strictly with ADHD, but then started realizing, you know, some people don't have it. They have executive function challenges or learning disabilities or are on the autism spectrum, and they're struggling with common challenges, right? So more along like the executive function challenges, essentially.
So
right?
You go with the broad stroke of a life coach.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It depends on who I'm talking to. I don't use life coach. I never use that language for whatever reason. I do focus, like I said, on I call it like diverse abilities, right? Mm-hmm. We're not disabled per se. What we have can be debilitating, but we're not disabled.
Right.
And just try to focus on stripping away what the label is and get to the core of what the problem is, mm-hmm. and then try to come up with strategies with my clients on how to deal with that.
Now, as far as the people that you coach, is it strictly in the Halifax general area, the metro as it's called, or do you go throughout the province, or how far do you go?
So I when I first started, I was coaching while I was a student, and then came out, and I got a little crazy there for a while. I actually have contracts, all government contracts, to coach at every post-secondary institution in Nova Scotia.
Very good.
I'm the only, I don't know anybody else that has that business model where they're coaching through the all the universities, essentially. And we coach students from all over Nova Scotia. We've got them from the States. I've got some kind of in North America in general. But we primarily focus on the one-to-one coaching. Mainly we work with the community college here, but we also work with students from the universities. I also, last year, I did expand and I hired and trained up another coach. So I typically handle the HRM, and she's down here once a week, but she's up in doing, Truro and
right.
Glasgow and the rest of the province. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's interesting. You mentioned about the schools. Now, when you approach them, does ADHD, is that front and center, or is that kind of behind the scenes? Because a lot of people have situations when dealing with, especially getting a post-secondary degree to get some help. Is ADHD on the top of the list, or do you just use that as a carry-on?
No, it typically is on the top of the list.
Really?
Typically is. I've fought very hard for... I've been advocating here in Nova Scotia pretty hefty over the last 5 years for that, because I know coming through high school that they basically get no support.
Right.
And I also know that the biggest anytime you're in transition, whether it is to school, work, entrepreneurship, or whatever it happens to be, that's when if you're going to fall off the rails, it's going to be in those big transitions, right? So I lobbied extremely hard to get this service covered here in the province, and I'm still to this date the only person who's allowed to do it, I guess, by building up the relationships that I did do right with the faculty of the schools.
That's great. I mean, not only great for you, but great for the students who have ADHD. Now, going one step further, I know nationwide, different schools have different views on ADHD, and there's really no set criteria when it comes to how do you facilitate an ADHD person. Some are better than others. Now, do you feel that with them bringing you on board, are these people who run these institutions, are they more accepting when it comes to ADHD and offering help over and beyond what you offer?
Nothing specifically, they'll refer them to me,
right.
and then I'll help work through it. And it all kind of depends on which institutions I'm dealing with. When I'm dealing with post-secondary, because I am, it's just a funny way that I get contracted, and I basically get contract through student loans to help the students. So I'm more working directly for the students. They just kind of facilitate the match.
Right.
But what it has done is definitely open up a level or a conduit for a conversation.
Sure.
Where I've been able to train a ton of educators and employers and caseworkers on how to better receive support and, you know, train individuals that
That's fantastic.
Have attention deficit disorder.
So you get the communication, which is usually some of the hardest things to get going, because some people mm-hmm. have this stereotype when it comes to ADHD. The fact that you've got that conduit happening, that's terrific. What about yeah. government? Have they become on board with what you're doing?
Yeah, so Pete Quilley, he's my buddy back in BC. He's one of the coaches back there. So he had started bcadhd.com, and you know, I don't know if you've talked to him in the past at all, but he's pretty heavy on the advocacy back in BC. And
right.
so we had chatted, and I said, you know, what could I do out here? Like, what are you guys doing to support it? And how can I maybe collaborate with you so we can do kind of this coast to coast thing?
Sure.
So he was putting on this, during ADHD Awareness Week, he was putting on book displays in libraries and stuff like that. And I was
right.
like, yeah, I could do that. And then he had got ADHD Awareness Week proclaimed by the city of Vancouver. It was the first city in Vancouver first city in Canada that did it. And I was like, man, I'm going to be the first province right in
right.
Canada that gets it proclaimed. Heidi beat me to it.
She got BC.
She got BC, but I got Nova Scotia proclaimed in 2015, I think it was.
I remember.
Yeah, and it's continued, right? So every year they renew it. Unfortunately, that one politician that I was dealing with, she got voted out. So not sure it's going to happen for this year, but it's definitely raised the bar in terms of communication. I do a lot of collaborating and a
Great.
Ton of networking here in the city. The biggest benefit about Nova Scotia is a small place.
Sure.
So
yeah.
if you're out networking and doing your thing, people know you. So people just kind of know me as the ADHD guy. And if anything comes up around that, they refer them to me.
Well, Keith, that's fantastic. I mean, I was concerned with I've got my family history in Nova Scotia. It's really refreshing that you've got someone like you who not only understands ADHD, you're living it, and you're able to do these connections and lay the groundwork. If we can get the rest of the country to do the same, I mean, we wouldn't be in the somewhat of a pickle at times that we're in now in some of the less progressive parts of Canada when it comes
exactly.
to acceptance. Well, terrific. I want to keep in touch with you because this is interesting. I've got so many more questions to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But just before we close this out, we've got the Awareness Week coming up in October. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah, actually, I'm in the midst of putting a startup together called AdText, so ADD Text. And what it is, it's going to be 24/7 text-based coaching. What we're trying to do is target it towards millennials, right?
Right.
Millennials or just young people in general. It's kind of got a, we're shooting from like the 16 to 29 year old range. So what we're trying to do is bring this service as a, so 24 hour on demand, when you have a challenge, rather than blowing up on your teacher or what have you, you can get a hold of us. Or if you're stuck in hyper-focus and you need somebody to break you out of that, you can get a hold of us, right? What we're trying to do is provide that kind of, you know, the way the world's moving, it's kind of in a, everything's all about immediacy, right?
Sure.
So if you got a problem, you want to get unstuck right away, but the way that the mental health system is, that just doesn't happen. So
no,
what we're trying to do is put a solution together that does, like I said, focus on for attention deficit, learning disabilities and the like, and then speak to us. Like, so what, you know, if you need help with organization and time management, financial literacy, whatever it happens to be, and then also how to connect you to community resources. Because what happens a lot is that actually people focus so much on the clinical system
right.
and how weak it is, and they forget a lot about the like the nonprofit
mm-hmm.
And the community resources that are available. One of the things I've done over the last probably 4 years is run something called the Strategies for Success Expo. I'm not doing it this year just because I'm focused on that startup, but what I was doing was bringing together all sorts of random community organizations that you wouldn't think of as support for ADHD, but like therapists and financial literacy guys and nonprofits that deal with entrepreneurship and just teachers and everybody, and just put them together in the same room and say, hey, look, while it's not labeled as ADHD, it doesn't mean that, that those services and those resources that are out there can't help you be successful. And that's what I really focus on, is just trying to see it as less about, you know, that label and more about like, where are the problem areas we're having and who can I refer you to,
sure.
who can I connect you with to help you be successful in the long run. And that's my number one thing, is just making sure that people have the resources to be as successful as possible.
Do you have an email address that people can contact you?
Yeah, for sure. So it's KEITH dot GELHORN at AdTech, so ADDTEXT dot me.
That was Keith Gellhorn, an ADHD coach and advocate based in Halifax. If you'd like to get in touch with Keith, his email is keith.gellhorn at adtext.me. I'll spell that out for you. K-E-I-T-H dot G-E-L-H-O-R-N at ADDTEXT.me. By the way, the book Keith spoke about was You Mean I'm Not Stupid, Lazy, or Crazy? The classic self-help book for adults with attention deficit disorder, written by Kate Kelly and Peggy Raimondo. Once again, it's You Mean I'm Not Stupid, Lazy, or Crazy? The classic self-help book for adults with attention deficit disorder. Well, that's it for this edition of Club ADHD, the podcast, which is a presentation of Kadak. My thanks going out to them. My thanks going out to you for listening. Our next podcast upload is September the 19th. Now, don't forget to sign up for Club ADHD, the Facebook page, and Club ADHD, the Twitter account. And also, don't forget to please spread the news about these things that were created for adults with ADHD, just like us. Let's see if we can really get our membership numbers cranked up. Come on, we can do it. In the meantime, I'm your ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc, reminding you that we're not crazy, we're just a little different.